Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 10th of September. We watched or listened or both to the president's address before the joint session of Congress last night on health care reform, and there is much to respond to this hour. We'll be taking phone calls. I'm sure our lines will be crowded, so call in early. We'll go to phones as early as we can here this hour. Our guest is Professor Stephen Kristol, Associate Director for Health Services Research at the Institute for Health, Healthcare Policy and Aging Research at Rutgers University, Board of Governors Professor, School of Social Work at Rutgers University. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Stephen Kristol, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Yeah, good morning to you. Well, what did you think of his address overall? I thought it was quite strong.
I thought it was strong also. I thought it was very effective, a very, very powerful political speech, and I think we're moving forward on this process, which is a slow process of really a national dialogue where the people, the public, have a little more understanding of what is at stake with these very complicated decisions. It's a difficult thing to reform without that kind of dialogue. And we had, as viewers saw, a very nice illustration. The Republicans were kind enough to show us the level of civility and rational debate that's been coming from some of the others on the other side when one of their representatives heckled the president. And we need to get beyond that. Heckling at town halls and accusations of death squads and so on, and have a serious conversation about really some very complicated and difficult economic and healthcare issues. And I think the speech moved us towards that. And the way that it was framed, which is really central, is that this is not just a routine political issue. Who's up? Who's down? This is life and death for many people, and this really has to do with our character as a nation.
Mm-hmm. He certainly talked about being and gave us some history too in terms of who he introduced and people who have worked on this for years and years and years. He talked about not being the first president to have brought up this issue and wanted reform, but he wanted to be the last president to do that.
Well, that was a nice line, but of course the. What we all need to really understand, and I think many people do, is this will go on for all of our lives and beyond as a political issue every single year, and it really is in every country. It's not something that you solve once, but nevertheless, there's people have written about something called path dependence, where when you get on the wrong path, you just sort of things get worse and worse. You get on the right path, things get better and better. So, from that point of view, the decisions that all of these things will be revisited. I mean, nothing gets cast in stone. Congress mm-hmm. meets every year. Every healthcare gets tweaked every year. Medicare does. Medicaid does. So every president will have healthcare reform on their agenda, regardless of what's done now. Nevertheless, these are really very critical decisions as to what path we put ourselves on, because the consequences of doing nothing are really bad for business, for people, for all of us,
mm-hmm.
and for government finance.
In terms of the 40 million plus people who are uninsured in this country, the 14,000 people he mentioned last night of Americans who lose their coverage every day, the 30 million who can't get coverage, do you think that the plan that he outlined last night will take care of those huge problems and significant problems?
I think it moves us in the right direction. There's still some things. The president has chosen. He's moving into now asserting the leadership, which is absolutely necessary to do something like this politically. But he's tried to avoid some of the mistakes of the Clintons by working closely with Congress and sort of not trying to dictate the process. The consequence of that is there's still a lot of details that because we're waiting for the Finance Committee and we're and Senator Baucus for some of his details, there's some things that aren't clear about the short term. I think a lot of people were a little bit surprised to hear that for the health insurance exchange, which is the heart of the whole thing, we're talking about waiting 4 years mm-hmm. for really to go into effect. So there's this rather critical thing which he alluded to, and there's a lot of high-level discussions going back and forth with congressional leadership about this. How do you structure the short-term response? I mean, clearly they'll do something in the short term about people who are uninsured. You know, while they're sort of setting up this exchange mechanism, what that is, and what the bailout is, and also what you do about health insurance reform in the short term. I mean, you have a pretty good political consensus around things like getting rid of pre-existing conditions, require the insurance industry to sell you insurance when you need it, and in particular when you need it, as opposed to only when you don't need it. But how you do that without sort of creating a downward spiral because sick people will sign up and other people won't, there's a lot of those details. But I think there are mechanisms for doing it. Every state has high-risk pools. You can put money into those high-risk pools. You know, there's things we can do next year to help solve this problem, and there's things that we can do next year so that this year it's estimated that there will be 900,000 medical bankruptcies,
personal
bankruptcies that come from people having unmanageable health care costs because they got sick. One of the interesting things is the majority of those people have insurance, but they're underinsured, because the quality of the insurance product that's out there for many of us is getting worse year after year. That affects about 2.5 million people, with about 3 people per family. So we could change that. You know, you can have fewer people. You can do some things on day one that will reduce that for next year. So what happens in the really short term isn't clear, but the tools are there to do it.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me a little more fully, because he didn't flush this out, and I don't fully understand what this health insurance exchange is?
The interesting thing is he credited Senator a couple of Republicans. He didn't credit the Massachusetts plan. And some of this is really borrowed, which was done under Romney when he was governor. And that really is a bipartisan idea. At least it's a bipartisan idea if we had any moderate Republicans left, which you still have a few of in Massachusetts. So it's really borrowed from the Massachusetts experience. And the interesting thing about the Massachusetts experience is, in spite of all the difficulties in doing this at a state level, it's worked pretty well. And Massachusetts has covered, I think, at least three quarters of the previously uninsured population. So part of this is to have, as they created in Massachusetts, a structured marketplace where people are pooled together so that small businesses can afford to buy insurance. They're not just going in with their three or four employees separately. And we're also there's a certain amount of sort of if you want to be in the exchange, you need to work with us to keep your rates affordable, to keep your it sort of starts creating a certain level of accountability, as the president said, on the product that insurance companies are offering. So how you do it is a bit complicated, but in essence, it's not very different from the insurance that all the members of Congress and federal employees have through the Federal Employee Health Benefit Plan, where you qualify a number of competing plans, and people choose between them. If they're low income, they get to be subsidized. If they're middle income, they get to be partially subsidized. And within the framework of something like that, then you can start to justify requiring people to buy the product, and that helps make it possible to require the industry to sell insurance to everybody, regardless of pre-existing conditions. So it all kind of fits together. And you know, Massachusetts has its problems, But Massachusetts has solved a big chunk of the problem. And the other interesting thing about the Massachusetts experience is once you start to do that and you have the system in place, then it becomes clear how you start to take the next steps, which everybody realizes you need to do, to say, how do you actually help organize healthcare better from a clinical and care organization perspective so that we're not wasting so much of our money? So in essence, that's an area where he really did steal an idea from Republicans. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it really is bipartisan. But bipartisan, I mean, Senator Grassley says, who's one of the biggest disappointments in this whole thing. He has positioned himself in the past as a little bit of a centrist statesman, but here he's really been pulled, very, very much to the negative side. So he says, well, we need to have a bipartisan plan that you could get 70 to 80 senators in favor of. That would be any plan that you could get 70 to 80 votes in the Senate for would be useless or worse. The president is going to have to do some things that are bold, and he's going to have to follow in the footsteps of Lyndon Johnson with Medicare, who pushed through a very partisan plan called Medicare in the face of very strident opposition. Roosevelt, who pushed through a very controversial plan called Social Security, and they may have to resort to majority rule. Majority mm-hmm. rule means that when you have a majority of the Senate, you can actually pass a plan through reconciliation, and you don't have this veto particularly with the death of Senator Kennedy. Even if you get every single Democrat to vote for your plan, and the Republicans maintain party discipline, because the leadership seems to have made a decision, they would much rather see Obama completely fail, and they think they'll do better in the next elections if he's perceived as a complete failure. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see a bipartisan plan passed. So, I think we could get a plan, but it's going to be bitter and it's going to be controversial, and there's no way to make that opposition go away. And if you sink to the lowest common denominator, you'll have a plan that'll be financially unaffordable.
It was such a moving tribute to Senator Kennedy last night, wasn't it, with his children in the audience and
it
his wife in the audience?
Was. And it was wonderful. I was thinking a little bit, and he was maybe having echoes of Martin Luther King when he talked about our national character.
Yes.
King talked about the content of our character,
mm-hmm.
and it is, and this is the first thing that we need to talk about is that, everybody into the lifeboat by themselves is not going to lead to good national policy, and the key to this whole thing politically is the if you scare people enough, then they're going to say, I might lose what I have, which is my insurance that I get from my employer. But, I work with health plans. I see what's happening to the quality of the coverage and to the affordability of the coverage every year. And every year, more and more costs have to be shifted back onto the employee because it's otherwise simply not affordable. And every year, our employers become less and less competitive with foreign employers because, we basically have this healthcare inefficiency tax. It's much easier in the days when before General Motors entered bankruptcy, they learned that they do much better to move production over the border into Ontario from Michigan because you have a difference of 5 or 10% of payroll on your healthcare costs that you save by moving to a country with a more rational national health system. So you multiply that by all of our employers. This is why we need to do something. So in other words, I think the key to the whole thing politically is whether people who currently have coverage decide that they'll do well enough and they don't want to see change and they're afraid of change versus I could be in that group.
Yes.
Next year.
Right. Let's welcome phone calls. We have tons of people who want to speak. We're talking about the president's address on health care reform last night. And our number is 800-486-8655. Mike from South Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Good morning to you and your guests. I'm a retired physician, and I call in periodically about this. I was extremely disappointed by this speech. I think he said nothing meaningful. I don't know why this guy can't bite the bullet and say, we need a public option no matter what, and unless we have that in the bill, I'm going to veto anything that comes to my desk. And if the Republicans obstruct this and filibuster, so be it, because this problem will continue, and then the onus of failure will be on them. I read in the New York Times a couple of days ago that 900,000 Americans declare bankruptcy each year, affecting 2.4 million people each year in this country. And he's proposing that we're going to get our act together in 4 years. I'm 63 years old. Why can't I simply elect to buy into Medicare now?
Professor?
Well, first of all, the Republicans have done a good job. This is something that I thought about a lot, and I always thought that the Clintons would have been better off instead of a 1,000-page health care bill with a two-word health care bill that says take out the words over age 65 from the Medicare statute. And that's an exaggeration, of course, but you know this concept. The seniors, they've done a good job of scaring the seniors about what might happen to their Medicare. I mean, I think on the merits, you're absolutely right, and on the merits of what would make a rational health care system. And this is what I was saying about path dependence, because this is not a battle we're going to win this year. In 20 years, we'll have something that looks like a single payer system, I would predict, because it may be administered through a lot of private plans, as Medicare now is. I mean, Medicare has private insurance companies as intermediaries and so forth. But I agree with the caller that they're in the sense that I think he was doing what's politically feasible, and I don't think he wants to leave the table empty-handed. And there's a real possibility that he'll leave the table empty-handed. I think he needs to fight for the public option. I don't know if he can get the public option. The public option has been grossly mischaracterized. It's really the way that this bill is set up. It's having an alternative among these plan choices, but the real reason for having the public option, I don't know if we can get the public option just from a political point of view. There's several Democrats that are even in the Senate that are wishy-washy on it. But we may end up having to learn this lesson again in a few years as the healthcare costs go up and up. The real reason why you need a public option in there is very simple, because with the private insurance system the way we have it now, there's a basic imbalance of pricing power between the payers and the sellers, and the private plans, no matter how big they get, cannot get the kind of prices that all the rest of the civilized world gets from healthcare providers. It's just the way that the Medicare Part D was set up is a perfect example, because they took a couple million people who had previously gotten people who get both Medicare and Medicaid, and move their prescription drug coverage from Medicaid to Medicare, and just on that one day, on January 1st, 2006, they increased the cost to provide the same drugs to the same people by about 25%, just by moving them from Medicaid into private plans. I don't know what. As a prospect of what would make a rational healthcare system, I completely agree with the caller. Whether it's politically feasible, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Let's pause for just a moment. We'll return. Our guest is Professor Stephen Kristol, Associate Director for Health Services Research at the Institute for Health, Healthcare Policy, and Aging Research at Rutgers University. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, John Katz will be with us again. His latest book, Soul of a Dog, Reflections on the Spirits of the Animals of Bedlam Farm. We have one line open if you'd like to join our conversation about the president's speech last night. 800-486-8655 is the number. And let's go to Lynn from Sturtevant next. Hi, Lynn.
Hey.
Hi.
I'm calling because I am an administrator to our health care at work. So then I am also the person that would be, you know, participating, and we also own a small business. He has never said where exactly this money is coming from in order to pay for this. I haven't figured this out. If you could please answer that question.
All right, Professor Kristol.
Well, see, this is another one of these issues where there's a benefit and a cost to sort of trying to work with Congress as opposed to dictate a solution. There are many ways that it can be done, and I think now we sort of have an agreement. I think it's approximately clear enough what the cost is, and clearly there is a cost. Some of that cost you can recover. Because we're paying for health care of the uninsured now. We pay it through, you know, Medicare pays and Medicaid both pay in various ways to cover the uncompensated care costs. In your company, the caller's company, your members who are paying premiums are also paying the hospitals through cost shifting for all that uncompensated care. So it's being paid for. There is an additional cost. The options for doing it, let the tax cuts expire, which they're going to do without further legislative action on their own. The upper income tax cuts that came from the Bush era. The Finance Committee has been talking about fees on health care. You have this idea in the mix, which actually was a Republican idea. It was McCain's idea of eliminating or reducing the tax deductibles for at least the more expensive employer-based plans. There's a variety of ways that the money could come from, but there is an additional cost, but there's a huge cost to not doing this. And there's an awful lot of benefits from sort of having everybody in the same system. So I say whether you do it with a millionaire's tax, as has been proposed, whether you do it by reducing some of the deductions for high-end health insurance, whether you do it through fees on healthcare providers, whether you do it through letting tax cuts expire, all of those things are viable options. And you know, you're talking about an amount that is, as was pointed out, over 10 years is less than the cost of the Iraq War. So it's not something that it's something that we can't afford as a society.
He said that. Where is this part of the speech? Taking notes that that reducing inefficiency in Medicare would pay for most of this. Do you agree?
Well, when you say reducing inefficiency, if you reduce the overpayment for some services, you know, we pay for some things like primary medical care. You know, Medicare doesn't pay too great. But Medicare overpays for a lot of things. They overpay for the Medicare Advantage plans. They overpay for a lot of high-tech procedures. The medical specialists do extremely well. The hospitals still do extremely well on Medicare. Moving Medicare towards a less wasteful system is is a process that has to be undertaken, and we have to work at it every year. And, you know, we can get there over time, but it's not going to happen in a year or two. But there is a lot of overpayment in Medicare. And one of the ideas that President Obama mentioned in the speech last night was, and what he was talking about is having a commission that can try to deal with some of these spending issues. And what he means is that we have advisory committees, like we have something called the Medicare Policy Advisory Commission. And what they do now is every year they issue recommendations. But Congress keeps it in its own hands if you want to really change the reimbursement for something or change coverage, you know, Congress kind of micromanages it, and that puts it all in the political realm, which is why we have overpayment for a lot of things. I mentioned this little issue of a couple $1 billion. This particular one costs us a couple $1 billion unnecessary every year, but $1 billion here, $1 billion there, starts adding up to real money. So we could impose Medicaid level rebates on Medicare, Medicaid dual eligibles,
mm-hmm.
in the prescription drug program, saving a couple $1 billion a year. You know, you can multiply that by a lot of different things that we can do without hurting the clinical care that the people on Medicare receive. And the president was mentioning this research on sort of in the areas of the country like Miami where Medicare costs almost twice as much as it does, say, in Minneapolis, people are not getting better care, and they're not getting better outcomes. What happens is that you have a lot of entrepreneurial things going on where you have specialty physician-owned hospitals that are revving up business for high technology things, for scans and other expensive things that are sort of gaming the system a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and you don't get better health care in those places. So this shows us that it is possible to do. How you do it, you know, you don't do it all in one year, but is it achievable over time? It's achievable.
Thanks, Lynn, for the call. Bill from La Crosse. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Bill.
I thought I would share my experience. And two words, I guess. One would be rationing. The other would be transparency. And people don't talk about my experience very much, but I think it's pretty common. I had heart bypass surgery. My employer provided health insurance. When the bills started coming in, a lot of the bills were being modified. The amounts were not being paid. And it was because they only paid usual and customary. And so, aha, I figured out that my employer had paid for a policy that only paid for usual and customary. That was rationing. Then, $20,000 later, of course, you know, fool me once, it won't happen again. Now I know to read the fine print, understand everything in the fine print.
Were you stuck paying the difference?
Yeah, but then I said, okay, well, tell you what, from now on, I'm only going to go to doctors that charge usual and customary. And the answer was, well, we can't tell you where that is. That's kind of a secret. And I said, but after I ended my research when I found out that United Healthcare owns the company that figures out what usual and customary is. And sure enough, my insurance company was United Healthcare. So I think transparency also applies. And
yep.
Just based on my experience, I would give your listeners a warning. Read the fine print. Understand the fine print. Because if you think you have insurance, you may not. There's rationing going on. And then as far as transparency with insurance companies, well, what can you say?
So you had to pay $20,000, Bill?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, this is why this whole idea, which looks like a nice free market kind of reform idea of sort of pushing everybody out into individually negotiating with buying insurance individually and negotiating individually with providers and so on. You know, why all this is such a bad idea? Because you as an individual are helpless in the face of these companies, you know, and you need go-betweens to, this is sort of a uniquely American phenomenon, and it's because, quite frankly, providers can play one payer off against the other, and they can say, well, I'm not going to, I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to be a participating provider in your plan. I'll take what the insurance pays, and then I'll charge the customer the rest. And in the kind of environment that we have, those kinds of things are possible. Now, if you had been in different circumstances, you could conceivably have ended up as one of those medical personal bankruptcies, even though you have insurance. And that's exactly what's wrong with the system we have.
Thanks, Bill, very much for your call. Dave from Menominee, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, thank you. A couple points. You know, last night when I watched the speech, you know, President Obama said he's not going to let Medicare, Social Security be gutted out, you know, and become some type of privatized entity, which would, you know, end the system as we know it. And he said he's not going to let that happen on his watch. And the left stood up and the right sat stone-faced. We
yeah,
have to understand
the
people on the left and on, especially on the right, have to understand the Republicans do want to eliminate Social Security. They do want to eliminate Medicare. I think we need to have a little bit more, pinpoint, I guess, talking about that. The other thing is about the takeover. We're not being explained, when they say there's going to be this government takeover. Now, if we have a public option and these other private companies see this, we're being told, we're given the impression that they're just going to go out of business. They're going to shrug their shoulders and go, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. When, of course, that's not what's going to happen. They will do everything possible to stay in business and actually have to compete. And I think, you know, the public has a hard time understanding that because it's not being explained. You know, the people on the left are not explaining it, in finite words. And I think that needs to be done.
I totally agree. And, you know, this is the problem that we had with the Clinton thing. Ultimately, it was a problem of people didn't understand it. And if they didn't understand it, they were scared of it. And it didn't sufficiently show how you build on things that exist that people already understand. Medicare is something that exists and that we understand. So the caller that talked about offering people buy into Medicare, he was onto something. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that hasn't been included in this, it would be expensive, but it would move us in the right direction, and it would solve a big chunk of this problem right now. You know, let the 55 to 64-year-olds who have had to retire early, maybe for health reasons, buy into Medicare and talk about how we build on things that currently exist. I mean, the biggest problem that we've always had in getting any kind of reform through is how complicated it all is, and it's been a lot of special interests. You know, like it that way. They contribute tremendous amounts of money to Congress people. I mean, part of the issue here is that every one of those key senators on both parties gets reelected on some of the things that gets them reelected is these huge campaign contributions that they get from every sector of the healthcare industry. So they're not necessarily just representing the people. They're representing the folks that pay to get them reelected.
Get them in office. Dave, thanks for the call. The president said last night that he thought probably 5% of the American public would go into a public option plan. Where did he come up with that figure? Do you think it's too low?
I don't know. It's impossible to answer until you see how it's set up. And in a certain, you know, to a certain extent, I think it doesn't matter. I don't think that anything that's going to get passed remotely is going to crowd private insurance out of the system. But it certainly could make private insurance more honest. The big problem with private insurance is there's a black hole in that system that a third of the money disappears into, the way that it's structured now. Between administrative costs, between all of the marketing costs from selling insurance individually, or even to thousands and thousands of employers, we're lucky if two thirds of those dollars end up in paying for actual actual health care. So you just have that's one of the things that just really increases the premiums and increases the premium costs for employers and increases increases the premium costs for employees. One thing that people aren't talking about is there's a lot of people right now that could be covered through their employers, and they can't even afford their share of the premiums.
Let's go to Barb from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Barb.
Good morning, and thank you for this important discussion. I get really worked up about this. I just had a couple of comments. I really appreciate that previous caller who had to read the fine print. I work in a small rural hospital. Not all hospitals are doing well. Ours does a lot of charity care, and we're really struggling. Do a lot of outpatient services, but I have patients who have health insurance. They can't even meet the deductibles for the most basic care following rehab surgeries, which means in many cases they can't even afford to do the follow-up rehab that is required for surgeries. That means they might as well not have the surgery in the first place because the outcomes are awful. But the other question, it seems like all of the guns have been pulled out already as far as the myths about mandatory abortions and sex changes and pulling the plug on granny and all kinds of stuff. It's my understanding that the Family Research Council is coming out today with a response to Barack Obama's that is expected to be scathing and attacking and against this. I don't understand how anything is hardly any more family value than taking care of our citizens. I get really upset with the prospect of something coming out, and I just wanted to ask your guest if he is aware of that, what he kind of expects from that response from the Family Research Council, and I thank you.
I wish the Family Research Council would be a little bit concerned about the many thousands of kids that are going to be born prematurely because under this present system because their mother did not have prenatal care, and some of whom will be impaired for life as a result, or brain damaged because they were, you know, they were born as 24-week or 28-week preemies to a mother who didn't have prenatal care, and you know, I was hoping for a while that we sort of get past this ancestral polarization between the so-called right to life and right to choice, and that the people that consider themselves right to life would be concerned about kids' well-being from the moment they're born, as well as only before. It's really a messy issue because I'm not quite sure how you finesse this issue. I think they're going to. I think that the various proposals have kind of said, well, federal subsidies won't apply to services like abortion services, but abortion is sort of a normal part of medical care. So I don't know the answer to that question. It's just one more of the complicating factors that makes it very hard to pass stuff. But I think the only solution to this is to, you know, to have a rational discussion where we talk about kids' well-being. You know, even kids' well-being during pregnancy, if their mother is not getting prenatal care. I mean, a lot of these uninsured people that we have in include mothers.
Yeah. Let's pause for a moment. Professor Stephen Kristol is our guest. We're talking about the speech, long-awaited speech from the president last night on health care reform. Stephen is Associate Director for Health Services Research at the Institute for Health, Healthcare Policy, and Aging Research at Rutgers University. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program this Thursday, John Katz will join us again. He has a new book, Soul of a Dog, Reflections on the Spirits of the Animals of Bedlam Farm. And we're welcoming phone calls. We have one line open. the lines have been busy, so try now and you ought to be able to get through. 800-486-8655. The president mentioned last night, Professor Crystal, that 80%, there's agreement on 80% of what needs to be done. Do you think that's true?
I'm not sure. The problem is that the pieces of this really fit together. For example, everybody, I think, on both sides would say they agree in principle that we should get rid of the pre-existing conditions requirements. That it should be possible to go out and buy insurance when you need it, and particularly if you actually need it. But if you don't combine that with something else, then you have a lot of free riders, and as soon as you get sick, you go out and buy health insurance. And the danger is if you don't get everybody into the pool, then you get kind of a death spiral of premiums, and you get employers dropping coverage and all the rest of it. So then you say, well, okay, then we are we going to have guaranteed issue, no rescission, and then once you start to have only parts of this, the parts that everybody sort of says they agree on, there may only be 20% that we don't agree on, but that 20% may be the parts that are kind of essential to the viability of the whole thing. And I do think the public option is very important, and the public option is where very powerful industries, the same insurance industry that killed the Clinton reform, has drawn a line in the sand. And they say, we don't want to live with that kind of competition. And they have leaned very, very hard on the politicians. I think in the whole, there's hardly a Republican moderate left in Congress. There's like three of them. And for the most part, the party has leaned hard. Senator Grassley, I think, has been a huge disappointment. I've appeared before Senator Grassley's committee, and he knows better. And he's basically taking very much of a party line on this, and he doesn't want anything to get through that's not so watered down. And the danger of doing something that doesn't have a public option in it, that doesn't have some of the other kinds of reforms in it, is simply that then if you pump more coverage into this system and you don't do anything to control the costs, then what I fear is that there's several different scenarios and that could separately from one another end up with our spending close to a quarter of our entire gross domestic product in 10 to 15 years on healthcare. We're spending about 18% now, which is way out of line with the rest of the world. We're competing with countries that are spending 10 and covering everybody and providing better health care and getting better options. So if you solve all your political problems, when they put the British health care system through and the medical profession was protesting and other people, it was said that they got it through by stuffing their mouths with gold. And something similar was said in the at the beginning with Medicare, that it was gotten through by not tackling some of the hard problems. So originally with Medicare, when Johnson got it through, in order to get it through, he had to promise that we would pay everybody their usual and customary prices. Pay the hospitals whatever their usual and customary prices were, pay the physicians the usual and customary prices. And that really caused Medicare in the early years to get very much out of control, and ultimately they fixed it. So maybe we could, pass this and then fix some of the problems. But we can't afford as a country to be paying this healthcare inefficiency tax forever. I mean, the numbers have really, for some reason, the Republicans have said comparisons to other countries are irrelevant. They want to discourage it. But anybody that looks around and honestly compares with what other countries are doing, you compare with with France, with Germany, with Canada. And what they have in common is there is more of a government role, but the government structures the system. The government doesn't deliver health care in those countries. And that's what you need, because we don't have a national understanding of what's sort of unique about the economics of health care. And every other country has solved it by having a bigger public role. So, it's really kind of very uncertain what the president will end up with. But I very much sympathize with those callers who said the president had better hold firm, because you're not going to get most of those Republicans on your side anyway.
Right.
They've made the calculation that they're better off at the next elections. If the president is perceived to be a failure, if they join with the president in something bipartisan, then he looks like a success. And then why should the voters turn to the Republicans the next time? So they've made that calculation. So I think it's time for majority rule. I think it's time for put something through with a majority of the Senate.
Okay, let's go to Margie from Franklin. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I want to ask a question and make 2 points, and I will go quick. I want to know where our faith has gone, and I don't mean religious faith. I mean the faith in a mission. I was a single mom that had 4 children, and I had to make the decision between public and private schools. I took a leap of faith that my mission was to send them to a private school, a Catholic school, and I would do what I needed to make it work. I kept an old car, no fancy clothes, simple vacations, but they graduated from a Catholic high school, which was a value-based decision for me. Can you imagine how many people would take a trip to California if they had to map out every step of that trip, exactly the minute they'll leave, identify all the contents in the car, how many miles they're going to travel each day, guarantee that they're not going to have a blowout tire, they're not going to need an oil change, there's not going to be traffic or construction problems? Most people would never risk taking the trip. Now, I, on the other hand, might make a leap of faith that I want to be in California to visit a dying relative. That's my goal. I have faith that there's roads leading to California and service stations along the way, and I have my cell phone for emergencies. Now, I'm going to have a wonderful adventure while others sit home in fear. Now, the insurance company doesn't want me to go to California. They want me to visit a healthy relative in Iowa. But my mission is to travel to California to visit a dying relative. But the insurance company is going to set up all these roadblocks. Does that make sense?
I think it makes sense. I think it's wonderful. And I hope that you intended it. I would certainly apply it to to me it is a wonderful metaphor about launching ourselves on the road to health care reform, passing a bill, and then saying it's not cast in stone. If there's problems with it, we'll fix the problems as we always have with Medicare, for example, and commit ourselves to go on the road to covering all of our people. I mean, this is just an ethical scandal and just totally impractical, and we can't wall ourselves off from all those people that don't have coverage. So I think you're right. I think this is exactly the political dialogue right now. We have people yelling and shouting and heckling and saying, if you go down that road, you'll have death squads, you'll have all sorts of terrible things going on. This is not all going to happen in a dark closet. We're not going to have that kind of rationing in this country, but we can commit ourselves to going down a road that says everybody's entitled to coverage. The health insurance companies don't have carte blanche to do whatever the heck they want, to ration your care in whatever way they want, without any oversight. They're going to be a regulated industry, and they're going to compete with something that is organized like Medicare on a national level, and I totally agree with you. I want to get on that road to California. I want to pass a bill and say, let's go on the road to California. In 4 years, we'll get to California. We've bought the map. We've gassed up the car. You know, if we get a flat tire, we'll fix the flat tire.
Thanks very much for the call. And Professor Crystal, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you. This was great. Thanks so much.
Sure. Professor Stephen Crystal, Associate Director for Health Services Research at the Institute for Health, Healthcare Policy, and Aging Research at Rutgers University, and on the Board of Governors, professor in the School of Social Work at Rutgers University. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing the hour, and to Rob as well for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. Ben Marins will have more on health care and the president's address during his show. And just a reminder that our health care forum, our live forum, is coming up soon. It's next Wednesday at Frederick Cancer Institute. We will be having a panel of 8 people from many aspects of the healthcare, from people who deliver care, hospital administrators, people from a pharmaceutical company, the insurance company. So it should be a very good broadcast live next Wednesday for the full 2 hours. Thanks for listening, everybody. News is coming up, and we'll return here on the Ideas Network.